Deuteronomy chapter 5, starting at verse 1. Moses summoned all Israel and said, "Hear, Israel, the decrees and laws I declare in your hearing today. Learn them and be sure to follow them. The Lord our God made a covenant with us at Horeb. It was not with our ancestors that the Lord made this covenant, but with us, with all of us who are alive here today. The Lord spoke to you face to face out of the fire of the mountain. At that time I stood between the Lord and you to declare to you the word of the Lord, because you were afraid of the fire and did not go up to the mountain. And he said, 'I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. Honor your father and your mother, as the Lord your God has commanded you, so that you may live long and that it may go well with you in the land the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. You shall not set your desire on your neighbor's house or land, his male or female servant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. These are the commandments the Lord proclaimed in a loud voice to your whole assembly there on the mountain, from out of the fire, the cloud, and the deep darkness. And he added nothing more. Then he wrote them on 2 stone tablets and gave them to me." Please hold for the second part of our reading.
"When you heard the voice out of the darkness, while the mountain was ablaze with fire, all the leaders of your tribes and your elders came to me, and you said, 'The Lord our God has shown us his glory and his majesty, and we have heard his voice from the fire. Today, we have seen that a person can live even if God speaks with them. But now, why should we die? This great fire will consume us, and we will die if we hear the voice of the Lord our God any longer. For what mortal has ever heard the voice of the living God speaking out of fire as we have and survived? Go near and listen to all that the Lord our God says. Then tell us whatever the Lord our God tells you. We will listen and obey. The Lord heard you when you spoke to me. And the Lord said to me, 'I have heard what this people said to you. Everything they said was good. Oh, that their hearts would be inclined to fear me and keep by all my commands always, so that it might go well with them and their children forever. Go, tell them to return to their tents. But you, stay here with me, so that I may give you all the commands, decrees, and laws that you are to teach them to follow in the land I am giving them to possess.' So Be careful to do what the Lord your God has commanded you. Do not turn aside to the right or to the left. Walk in obedience to all that the Lord your God has commanded you, so that you may live and prosper and prolong your days in the land that you will possess.
Well, please keep your Bibles open. Thank you very much, Aidan and Dave. Thank you for reading for us. The title is coming up on the screen. When it's hard to be good, we're looking at Deuteronomy 4, verse 44 up to chapter 5, verse 33. And I wonder if you know what it is like to feel like that, like you're pushing a boulder uphill, trying to change, trying to do the right thing, trying to be the person that you want to be and do good. But you're stuck in a bad habit. You know it's wrong. You want to be different, but you're not different. Some wrong pattern of behavior. Perhaps you want to be more honest and tell the truth, or you want to deal with a problem with lust or handle money in a better way or control the overwork or whatever it might be. And so you set yourself rules to keep, goals to achieve, targets. You tell yourself, this time it will be different. This time I'm going to be strict with myself and firm with myself, and I'm going to use willpower and change and get on top of this. But in the end, it doesn't turn out that way. You find yourself not changing and not doing the thing that you would like to do, doing the thing that you don't want to be doing. And sometimes you wonder whether it's still worth trying to change. Well, the Bible helps us with that. Today's Bible reading is really written to help people to obey God. It's written originally to, first spoken to a group of people, the Israelites. They're about to start a new life with God. They're about to enter a new land that God is giving them and be a community there together. And they're setting out on this long-term project. And they need to, they're being told, look, here's how to obey God as you live there. There are lots of things to get right. And the book of Deuteronomy, the middle of it, gives lots of detailed instructions, chapter 12 to 26, for all the different things that people will face in their day-to-day lives and how to obey God. But before we get to that, Moses needs to tell them, well, how are you going to obey? I'm going to give you these rules, but how are you going to obey them? How are you going to manage that? We're going to look at the answer step by step. It begins, I've summarized it like this. We obey because we're saved. We obey because we're saved. I think that's what the first part is. The little introduction to the Ten Commandments are really saying we obey because we're saved. We're not saved because we obey. We obey because we're saved. We don't receive God's love by trying very hard to do what he says. We do what he says because we've received God's love. And we're responding to that. So turn back over the page. We didn't read this bit, but the reading really starts at chapter 4, verse 44, at the bottom of the previous page, page 183, verse 44, starts like this. This is the law Moses set before the Israelites. These are the stipulations, decrees and laws Moses gave when they came out of Egypt. And the rest of those sentences give us lots of names and places. And the reason for that is because they need to remember that journey that they have taken out of Egypt. It needs to be in their hearts and minds. They need to know how they got to this point. We've been using this map to summarize it in a simple way. If you remember, we've seen that God rescued them out of Egypt. He took them out of Egypt. He took them to a mountain called Horeb in the desert, in the wilderness, and that's where they met God. And then from there, God led them up to the land that he was giving them. And they are waiting now to enter that land and listening to Moses as he speaks. And they need to remember that God rescued them from Egypt and brought them into a relationship with himself. They need to remember they were saved for a relationship with God. It's the Bible word for that relationship is the word covenant. which means that it is a committed relationship, a binding promise from God to us that we're invited to respond to with a similar commitment to God. It's a bit like two people getting married. Sometimes that's called a covenant. God says, I take you to be my people, my lawful wedded people, to love and protect and honour. And we say, I do. Yes, I'll be part of that relationship. So that word covenant is used. Let's turn back over to chapter 5 and I'll read it from verse 2. Chapter 5, verse 2. The Lord our God made a covenant with us at Horeb. A covenant. It was not with our ancestors that the Lord made this covenant, but with us. With all of us who are alive here today. The Lord spoke to you face to face out of the fire on the mountain. Look, says Moses, don't think this is all history. Don't think it's all in the past. Don't think it was just your parents and your ancestors. Okay, you weren't there. You weren't alive at the time. Many of you, some of you perhaps, but most of you weren't there. You weren't alive. But it's not with them that God made this covenant. It's with you. All of you who are alive today, even those who weren't born when these things happened, God saved you and God met you and God spoke to you. God saved you. That's why the Ten Commandments begin as they do in verse 6. I am the Lord, your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. I am the Lord, your God. I have a personal relationship with you now. Why? Because I rescued you. I saved you from slavery and brought you out of that. It was miserable for the Israelites in Egypt. They were forced and controlled and oppressed. They were trying to do impossible things. They had no say over it. They were helpless. But God saved them. And of course, all of this is really speaking to us, isn't it? It's not about people who lived thousands of years ago in the Old Testament. It's about us. It's about God saying to us, I am the Lord your God. And I've saved you and brought you into relationship with me. That's what it says elsewhere in the Bible. So, for example, up on the screen, but thanks be to God that though you used to be slaves to sin, you have come to obey from your heart the pattern of teaching that has now claimed your allegiance. That's from Romans 6, verse 17. It says you used to be slaves to sin. Until we come to know Jesus and receive him in our lives, we are slaves to sin. We're controlled by it. We can't obey God. We can't help but disobey him. We're trapped in it. We're helpless to improve ourselves and fix ourselves and change ourselves. But then Jesus steps in and he saves us. He rescues us. He dies for us so that we are forgiven. He rises to life so that we can have eternal life. He gives us his presence, his Holy Spirit. And as it says there, he wins our hearts. You've come to obey from your heart. His pattern of teaching claims our allegiance. We don't obey because we have to. That is slavery. That's what we're saved from. Addictive patterns of wrong behavior and wrong desires. That's slavery. We're saved from that. We don't obey God because we have to. We obey God because we want to. Because we have a relationship with him and we know that he is our God. And because we love him now. Some of you heard me tell this story recently, but I like it. I'm going to tell it again. It's about someone I know who teaches at a university. And he noticed every day this young man come past him. And like a lot of young men who arrive at university, wasn't someone who seemed to prioritize personal hygiene particularly. He didn't really seem to be that worried about his appearance. It wasn't clear whether he actually had ever used an iron or a washing machine, for example, or whether he owned a hairbrush. And then one day, he's walking around the corridors, this young man walks past and he's transformed. His clothes are new and immaculate. His hair is all perfect and there seems to be some kind of gel in it, and there's a nice smell of deodorant wafting as he goes past. And my friend, the university lecturer, looks at him and, says to himself, I wonder who she is. I wonder who she is. You see, that looks like someone who has fallen in love and changed everything about themselves because of that. Probably his poor mother had tried really hard when he was growing up. Probably she told him again and again and again, look, if you don't pick your clothes up off the floor of your bedroom and put them in the wash, they're just going to get trampled on. If you put them back on again, they're not going to look nice or smell nice. She's told him that lots of times, and it's made no difference. But now a moment has come when he has what he needs. What he needs is motivation. And the question for us is whether we know Jesus. Whether we know that he has saved us, that he's rescued us, that he's brought us into a relationship with him, that he is our God now, and whether he's won over our hearts and our desires, our loyalty, our allegiance. We obey because we're saved. That's the introduction to the Ten Commandments. And then the first part of the Ten Commandments seem to be saying this. They seem to be saying we obey because we're saved, so love God. We obey because we're saved, so love God. Verses 7 to 15. God saves us, brings us into that committed relationship with him. And here is how he wants us to show our love for him. Well, firstly, chapter 5, verse 7. Firstly, you shall have no other gods before me, or it could be besides me. No other god, no alternative god, no substitutes. God doesn't allow any competition for his affections. There should be nothing and no one in our lives that is a higher priority to us or that matters to us more than God himself, who made us and saved us and loved us. He's the only true God. He has to be number one. That's the first thing. And then the second thing, chapter 5, verse 8. You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. Don't replace God with something you've made. There's no room for a sort of DIY God. You're not being asked to sit and reflect and imagine the kind of God that you would like to believe in. You're not invited to design your own spirituality or your own approach to God. God is not interested in the God you want to worship. That isn't the real God. He is the real God. And he is saying to us, worship and obey me as I want to be worshipped and obeyed, as I've revealed myself and shown myself to the world. That's the second thing. Firstly, nothing above God. Secondly, don't make up your own God. And then thirdly, chapter 5, verse 11, you shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God. For the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. If you translate that literally, the word misuse, you could unpack it like this. Don't carry God's name in a way that is empty. God's people carry his name. We are associated with God. We're known as his people. Don't make that just empty words. That's what God is saying to us. Don't give God a bad name by the way that you act and the way that you talk. Don't behave in a way that damages his reputation. When we pray, we say, hallowed be your name. May your name be respected and honored and recognized. And God is saying, don't misrepresent me in the way that you live. And then fourthly, chapter 5, verse 12, observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. God is saying, rest once a week. Take a whole day off, one out of every seven. And make it easy for other people around you to do that as well. Even animals need to rest because that is how God made the world, to depend on him, to rely on him. We can't manage without him. We're limited. And God reminds us of that once a week. We have to rest and take a day off. And even nature needs that. And God is saying, do that for me. Do that as part of your relationship with me. Now that is how, that is what we're to do. That is what we do to show our love for God. But the Ten Commandments, I don't know if you noticed this, they also say why we should do it. As well as giving us the command, they also give us the motivation as it goes along. I don't know if you spotted that. Let's have a closer look at some of them. For example, chapter 5, verse 9. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. Why? For, because, here's the reason for obeying that command. For, I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandment. Why? Why obey God's commands? Well, because he gets jealous. Love does that. Real love. True love does that. God has committed himself to us. He's got a covenant with us. He's brought us into a relationship with himself. And we said, I do. And he's saying, don't cheat on me. Don't two-time me. Don't betray me. Don't make me number two in your life with someone else as number one. Don't find some substitute or replacement, because he loves us, and real love gets jealous. I mean, that is right, isn't it? You're not really committed to someone. You don't really love them unless there's some sense that you expect something in return, some kind of loyalty. And God knows when people hate him. It's a strong word to use, isn't it? But he knows. He sees hearts. He punishes, it tells us here, sometimes a whole family, could be as many as three or four generations in those days, still sometimes in these days, three or four generations living together in one household. Oh, we say, well, that sounds unfair. But only because we have this kind of crazy modern Western idea that each person stands on their own as an isolated individual, and that we have nothing to do with each other and no influence on each other. God knows better. He sees that we come in families and communities. And that most of the time what is going on is that a whole family hates God. And the kind of spokesperson for the family says it, but it's the whole family really who usually, not always, but usually will share the same values and the same attitudes. And God is saying that he's a jealous God. He responds to that. If we hate him and reject his love and reject his salvation and refuse him, and we show that by the way we live, we show that by disobeying his commands, he sees our hearts, and judgment falls on the whole family, three, sometimes four generations. But if his jealousy is great, and if his judgment is great, it is because his love is far, far greater. Did you notice that in verse 10? Three or four generations of those who hate God, but, verse 10, showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me. Not three or four, 1,000. They didn't have a bigger word. They didn't have a word for a million or a billion. They didn't need that, I guess, in their day-to-day lives. They only had a word for 1,000. It's as if they're saying God's love is just vast and just goes on. It's eternal, his love and his devotion and his commitment to us. His judgment is soon over. It's not where his heart is. What he really wants to do is love. And that's why he saved them. And this part of the commandments finishes reminding them that God saved them. Verse 15. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, this is the reason to obey. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. Do it because you're saved by a loving God. So we need to ask ourselves, does God come first in our hearts and in our lives? We might say to God, oh yeah, well I would take a day off. You know, I like the idea. Seems good advice, seems sensible. Normally I would, but just at the moment, you know, I can't. I've got too much work to do. There are clients, there are deadlines, I've got an exam coming up maybe. It's almost as if we're a married person and we're saying to our dear wife or our dear husband, darling, you know, I love you and I know it's our anniversary and that we always spend this day together, but, you know, I would if I could, but just this time I can't. I'm really sorry, you see, it's my old flame, it's my ex-girlfriend. You know what she's like, she doesn't really give me any say in the matter. She has insisted that she's coming round. Would it be okay if you just spent the night with your parents, because I think we're going to need the bedroom? God deserves better. He's a jealous God. Don't push him. But he's also a loving God. He has rescued you from the control that work had over your life, forcing you to act like a slave and driving you into the ground, into burnout and overwork. That doesn't control you anymore. You don't have to follow that master. You don't have to prove yourself by getting the best possible results, even when it exhausts you. You are saved. You have a relationship with him if you know Jesus, and it sets you free from that, and it leaves you saying, well, I need God. I depend on him. I'm very limited. I can only cope for 6 days. God has designed me to need a rest, and I'm going to show my love for him by stopping when he tells me to. We obey then, because we're saved. So love God. Love God. That's the first thing. And then secondly, love each other. If we love God, then we are going to love God's people. If we want to obey God, we're going to treat his people well. And chapter 5, verse 16 takes us there. Honour your father and your mother as the Lord your God has commanded you, so that you may live long and that it may go well with you in the land the Lord your God is giving you. Why honour and respect your father and mother? Is it because all fathers and mothers are wonderful parents at all times and deserve every possible respect? Well, I'm a parent myself, and I can tell you that is not the case. There are times when my behaviour and attitude doesn't really deserve any respect or honour at all. And I think parents here will admit that. It doesn't say that. It says, honour your parents because the Lord your God has commanded it. Verse 16. Because he's your God now, because this pleases him. And this is what he's looking for in your life. Again, the commandment isn't just a rule. There's motivation here. God is giving them a land. The end of verse 16. He's giving them a land. This is what he saved them for. To be a community, a people who live together in his presence. Now, if they're going to live long in that community, and it's going to go well for them among each other, then they are going to need to learn to treat each other in the best possible way. That will include parents, and it will include others as well. Here are some of the things they won't do if they care about that community. Chapter 5, verse 17, you shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbour. You shall not covet your neighbour's wife. You shall not set your desire on your neighbour's house or land, his male or female servant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbour. Don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal, and don't lie. And notice how verses 20 and 21 talk about your neighbour. The end of verse 20, the end of verse 21, your neighbour. In this new land, in this new community that God is giving these people, that Moses is speaking to, they're going to be living in amongst each other. They're going to have people all around them. They're going to have neighbours. And the issue is, how are they going to treat their neighbour? Now, these are mostly about actions and behaviour, aren't they? Things that you do. Things like murder and stealing and adultery and lying. Those are behaviours, those are actions. But God is saying it's not enough to get our behaviour right. We aren't going to change just by focusing on what we do. It begins with our hearts. It begins with what we want. And that, I think, is why the last of the Ten Commandments ends with don't covet. Don't desire. Don't want what others have. Adultery is wrong. It's a wrong behaviour. But it begins with desiring, with longing, with hearts that want that relationship, and dwell on it and desire it, and perhaps want that more than they want to obey and trust God. And stealing is wrong, but it begins again with wanting something, wanting to have things, feeling that we need to have those things, and we're so desperate to have, we can't be content without them, so much so that we're even willing to break rules and disobey God in order to have those things. And so if we're going to act well in a community, with our neighbour, then really the Ten Commandments are saying we need to love them. We need to get our hearts into the right attitude towards them. We need to love our neighbour. That's what the Ten Commandments are saying. So the first four commandments then are about our relationship with God. You could call it the vertical relationship. The other six commandments are relationships with each other. You could call those the horizontal relationships. And in both cases, it's about love. Love God totally and fully. And then love one another. Love our neighbour. And so perhaps it's not surprising that Jesus sums them up in exactly that way. Someone asked him, which law is the most important in the Bible, in the Old Testament? Here's how he replies. Up on the screen. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. The first four commandments. The second is this, love your neighbour as yourself. There is no greater commandment than these. Now in a group of this many people, I guess there will be some who are in a romantic relationship. And you know that one of you is married to someone else. And there are others, perhaps, who find yourself drawn to that relationship. There is a relationship like that you think, well, I would never do that. But you find yourself drawn to it. Perhaps you daydream. Perhaps your conversations with that person seem a little bit different to your conversations with other people. Perhaps there's a little bit of flirting, fantasy. And we in our society get used to thinking of that as love. We describe that as love. We excuse ourselves. We say we can't help who we're attracted to. We can't help falling in love, we call it. But God says that's not love. Love is when you think about the other person, the person that they are married to or the person that you are married to. And you ask yourselves, if I was that person, what would I want to happen? And then you do that. Love your neighbour as yourself. Now, it's easy to say, well, that person, you know, is terrible, a villain, a wicked, maybe they are. I mean, people can be terrible. Of course, we're going to say that, aren't we? Because you can't justify doing something wrong to somebody unless you've convinced yourself that they somehow deserve it. So we probably shouldn't trust our own attitude towards that person fully. But even if they are a terrible person and have behaved really badly, that's really got nothing to do with it, because we love our neighbour because we love God. And if we really love God, then he is saying, love your neighbour as yourself. Think of that other person, the person you're married to, the person they're married to. And love them. That's real love. And don't do it because you have to. Don't do it because you're feeling guilty. Don't do it because you're scared that God is going to punish you. None of that is going to work. Do it because you know how much God loves you. And that he saved you. And brought you into a relationship with him. We obey because we're saved. So love God. Love each other. And then just very briefly, the passage finishes by saying, and carefully obey all God's words. I'm not going to read that second reading that we have now. But basically what happens is that the people say, look, we're finding it difficult hearing direct from God. We've heard the Ten Commandments. But Moses, you go and speak to God and take down all the detail. And God says, that's a good idea. Let's do that. So Moses goes down and takes down a lot of detail. And now he's come back to the people. And in Deuteronomy, he is going to give them a lot of detail. In other words, it's not enough to have the headlines. It's not enough to have the broad brush. Okay, I need to be love God and love each other. You can't stop there. What does that look like? What will that look like in all sorts of different circumstances they're going to face in the Promised Land? There are chapters and chapters about that in Deuteronomy. And we need all of that, God is saying to us. We need all of that. Let's look at how it ends, verse 32. Verse 32, so be careful to do what the Lord your God has commanded you. Do not turn aside to the right or to the left. Walk in obedience to all that the Lord your God has commanded you, so that you may live and prosper and prolong your days in the land that you will possess. This is why God gave us the Bible. They had Moses, we have all the prophets. This is why God gave us the Bible, so that we would know how to love God and how to love each other, and so that we would want to. He's got something to say about how we do our tax returns, about that argument with your sister, your brother. He's got something to say about medical ethics, about anxiety, about prayer, about parenting, about everything that we face day to day in our lives. So let's take great care to really be listening to God's word and not to turn from it to the right or the left. We obey because we're saved. So love God and love each other and carefully obey all God's words. Let's take a few moments to reflect in quiet. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me.